So Rover Robotics is a relatively new startup creating robotic hardware. We make the robots that you see on the screen here. They're pretty small. It's hard to get a sense of scale from a picture, so I created a slide for you guys. So they're pretty small compared to a human, pretty large compared to a banana. They fit inside of a suitcase. I actually took two of these robots here in checked bags. I made my wife wheel one of the robots through downtown Hong Kong before this, so I'm eternally grateful for her for that. So what do our customers do with our robots? They do a lot of different applications, but the main one, I'd say, is data collection. So I've put some examples up here of things that our customers are doing or similar applications. So the first one you see is creating a digital twin of a construction site. This would be useful for a construction company wanting to gain insights into their construction project so that they can recapture some of that lost cost on mistakes that happen in the construction process. Or other applications like detecting debris on a runway so you don't have an airplane running over a small piece of scrap metal and getting a flat tire, or scanning license plates in parking lots. You might have a list of acceptable license plates in your parking lot, and you might send a robot around every day in order to detect who's in your parking lot for security application. So who are our customers? They're not construction sites, and they're not airports or people with parking lots. They're people like you who know ROS. They have an idea of what to do with ROS, and they buy our robots and program that using ROS. And then they sell it to the construction companies or the airports or people wanting security. So when we started the company, we wrote a ROS 1 driver, and that served us very well for a time. And now that ROS 2 has been released, specifically ROS 2 Dashing, we started porting our ROS driver over to ROS 2. And so we've had about 6 months of experience now in ROS 2. So I really wanted to share with you guys what our opinion is so far, what it's been like to work in ROS 2, and then share a little bit about what we're going to work on next. So I'm going to start with a little bit of motivation. So a little bit about the difference between ROS 1 and ROS 2. ROS 1 was originally built to share common code amongst robotics engineers so that you can really minimize how many people are rewriting the same code over and over again. And what we've seen from the ROS 2 movement and the ROS 2 community is it's really about reliable code and sharing that reliable code with the community. So what makes ROS 2 more reliable? So if you read about this online or on paper, there's a bunch of deep technical things like QoS, discoverability, things about the ROS master that have changed, and things about zero copy. And those things are important, but I think what's more important about ROS 2 is the shift in the community. There's a lot more professional programmers and maintainers using and maintaining ROS 2 and programming for it than in ROS 1, as far as we've seen as a company. So I've listed all the companies that are part of the ROS 2 steering committee that have a market cap over $1 billion. So there's a lot of recognizable names up here, a lot of big players in ROS 2. And this is what the programming and maintainer stack looks like. So you have Open Robotics at the bottom maintaining the core packages. And with ROS 2, you now have a new layer, which is the middleware layer, which is responsible for the publish and subscribe aspect. So there's companies like AD-Link and eProSema who are handling that. They have professional programmers who are maintaining that code. And then above that, you have the driver level. So you have big companies like SICK and Ouster and Bosch who are porting their ROS drivers to ROS 2. And then above that, you have like the navigation stack and your robot localization package. And there's actually a working group on that for ROS 2 led by Intel and Matt Hansen. He's doing a talk later today on navigation 2. So if you find this talk interesting, I recommend also attending his. So our opinion so far is, although we use these critical features of ROS2 that have kind of been an enhancement to ROS1, the bigger thing for us is that there's a lot more promise in ROS2 with all these professional programmers and maintainers joining the community. We look forward to what the things to come. So a little bit about our journey in ROS2. So about 6 months ago now, we attended the ReMars conference held by Amazon, and we did a demo using ROS1 Kinetic. We're a hardware company, but we all of our customers use ROS, and so in order to help them, we do demos internally so that we can get them going quickly. So this was part of that. So this robot uses a single 2D LiDAR that's mounted above the bin that you see here. Attendees of ReMars ordered a t-shirt on a tablet, and the robot navigated autonomously over to this t-shirt vending machine and got a t-shirt dispensed onto the robot, and then it would drive back. So very simple use case, very constrained environment. We built an arena around the robot to make our job really easy for this conference. And then next, we ported that to ROS2. So around the same time, we had just finished porting our driver, our ROS2 driver. So in order to test that, we ported this demo over to completely over to ROS2, and we took the whole thing to a convention called PAC Expo in Las Vegas, and that was in September. So it was about 3.5 months between ReMars and PAC Expo, and so we had a full-time engineer working on that port, doing that port. And so he, during that time, he ported our ported some sensor packages. He did some tuning of the nav stack, and then he fixed a lot of issues in the Wi-Fi interaction with the DDS layer, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But basically, we got the demo working wonderfully in our office, and then we took it down to PAC Expo, and nothing worked out of the box. So the, it's expected when you go to a conference that you're going to have really bad Wi-Fi, but there was it was extra bad because of the interaction between the DDS layer and the bad Wi-Fi, which that was what ROS2 was supposed to fix in part. So what happened? So this is our network setup. So we're running RViz locally on a laptop in order to do things like debugging and to generate our map. And then we're running the Navigation 2 stack on the robot. We're running robot localization and the sensor drivers and ROS2. And so the thing that happened that really really messed us up at PAC Expo was that there's a lot of configuration parameters for these DDSs, and they weren't tuned for this specific network setup. They work great when they're tuned well, but they just weren't tuned well for that environment. So we went out, and after this, after a couple days of debugging at that conference and then afterwards, we ended up getting it working for the later days of the conference. But we then started working with ADLINK Technologies and eProcima to get these default parameters working in these DDS packages so that you have off-the-shelf working code that works over Wi-Fi. So this is a breakdown of where we've spent time in the navigation stack over those 3.5 months. And as you can see, a lot of it was spent on this lower layer of the middlewares, and that's mainly because of the interaction with the Wi-Fi environment. And then we also spent some time porting drivers, obviously, and tuning robot localization, and then writing application code. So to give you a kind of a visual idea of what I'm talking about, of what we were dealing with, this is a little test that we came up with to show how fast each of the DDSs bring up the navigation stack. So when we began this process, we were comparing four different middlewares, and It's going to bring up ARVIS, and it's going to bring up our navigation code. And you can see they're taking a while. They're taking a while. I'll skip forward a bunch. So Cyclone DDS ended up bringing it up in around 11 seconds. And these numbers are very, there's a big tolerance on them. But the more important thing is, by the end of the video, you see that a few of them, it connects a while to start up, and FastRTPS and OpenSplice ended up failing. So we went and worked with those companies in order to fix those issues, and now this is an updated version of what the current state of those middlewares is. So. It's the Wi-Fi. This is not running over DDS, though. So if this doesn't load, I'll just tell you the results. So we now have 3 out of the 5 working, bringing up the navigation stack in 10 or 11 seconds. And those include FastRTPS and OpenSplice commercial. So that was a big win for us. We really want people to have the option of choosing working middlewares in order to build the foundation on top of it, because if the middlewares don't work, then nothing in ROS really works. So after that, we kind of got sucked into doing some more tests into this, and we've kind of, even though we're a hardware company, we've kind of by accident become kind of a go-to person for our company for middleware testing, so we just rolled with it. We did a little bit more benchmarking. This is a comparison of Cyclone DDS and FastRTPS. This is sending medium-sized packets back and forth. This would be like a 2D laser scan size packet. And as you can see, the latency is pretty comparable for medium package size. But then for big package sizes, Cyclone DDS is doing a lot better with our benchmarks, and this is because of mainly shared memory and something called zero copy, where you don't have to shuttle these big packages to different parts of memory. So that's a big thing for images. You don't want to spend all of your CPU resources shuttling around images, so it's very important to have zero copy. And so right now, Cyclone DDS has it. FastRTPS is, according to Jamie from eProSema, is going to have it in February, so that's very exciting to us, so that we can send our images around our robot very fast, low latency, low resource utilization, because shuttling those images not only adds latency, but it also adds to your CPU usage. So, what has it been like to work in ROS2 so far? So we've spent a significant amount of time on almost every level of the stack, debugging things. We've spent a lot of time on specifically the Wi-Fi environment and getting the middlewares working. And it's been pretty slow progress. But those issues have been largely fixed. And we're looking very forward to spending our next coming months with more of a work structure that looks like this, where we're spending a little amount of time on the RMW layer and a lot more time on porting more drivers. And specifically, the thing we're most excited about doing next is working with the Navigation 2 stack and getting a SLAM package, one that's very reliable, ported over to ROS 2. So that's what we'll be spending most of our time on after this conference. And then our hope for the future is that after we do that porting of a SLAM package and have kind of a reliable working horse SLAM package in ROS2, our hope is that our customers can spend 90% of their time, or over 90%, on application code. So writing high-level code of go here, take a picture, go here, do a scan, go here, take a measurement, and they don't have to worry about all the lower things on the stack. So That's the end of my presentation. I have a robot up here. It's very excited to present that we have a robot fully working on ROS 2. ROS 1 is not running anywhere on the robot. There's no ROS bridge. It's fully in ROS 2. It's doing mapping. You can come see it after the talk. It's doing a port of G mapping currently, because that was what was ported. But as I mentioned earlier, after the conference, we're going to be working on mainly the porting SLAM packages. So, yeah, now I think we have some time for questions.
Thank you, Nick. It looks like we got a question ready. Are David and Philip ready to set up? Can you answer questions while they get set up?
So a bit of context, I'm the CEO of the company. I have an engineering background, but this is Nick Padilla. He's my go-to engineer for all of this stuff. He's the one I'm going to rely on for some of the hard-hitting questions.
We got a question there.
Yeah. Hi. So you mentioned that you had to do some configurations in the DDS for it to work reliably over Wi-Fi. Can you give some details about that?
Yeah, so on our website, we're doing a running blog on all of our progress. So one of those blogs has details on what specific parameters in order to set in order to fix a lot of these Wi-Fi issues. But I would say our hope is that you don't have to go to our blog to fix those issues. Our hope is that these just work out of the box. So we're actually working with ADLINK and ePersima to make that happen.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues right now with DDS and Wi-Fi is the fact that most Wi-Fi devices don't work well with multicast. So our number one tuning, or I guess the two things that we recommend for tuning to get more efficient performance over Wi-Fi is, at least on Cyclone, is to enable something called SPDP, which allows multicast for device exploration, but then on the Wi-Fi networks, converts that over to unicast. That way you're not bogging down your Wi-Fi network with failed requests. The other one is to also use ROS domain IDs. So when the DDS is doing its exploration, it can restrict the number of devices on the network based on the domain ID, so that you're not just casting out to every single ROS 2 DDS device on your network.
You want to take
Good question.
Well, thank you, Nick. I think David's ready to go here.
Thanks, everyone.